direction, it fell into three distinctive companies. Right round the outskirts of the camp in the nation, we had what is so aptly being described as a nation of warriors. Then inside of that, as represented in the tribe of Levi, we have a tribe of workers. And then inside of that again, in Aaron and his sons, we have a family of worshippers. And while we see these things in three distinctive companies in the setting of the camp in relation to the tent of meeting, I think it has been rightly taught to us that as saints of God today, we are warriors, workers, and worshippers. That if we are moving in the light of the truth and the liberty of the Spirit, it's in these three spheres we function for God. Well, for our readings this week, the Lord helping us, it is the workers that is in view in the tribe of Levi. And perhaps the New Testament answer to it could be found in chapters like Romans 12, 12 to 1 Corinthians, the 4th chapter of Ephesians, where we are taught that various gifts have been given to the saints of God, as we might say, workers, in relation to the truth, in relation to the assembly today. Well, that's the point that we have in mind. And looking first of all at this instruction, their distinctive mustering and numbering from the rest of the children of Israel, we thought we might consider how God first of all called them into this place and formed them into this service. About them that perhaps appeals to all our hearts, and that is that when the nations, the tribes, or we should really say the sons of Israel, were gathered together when Jacob was about to die, we read about Levi, a brother was speaking to us about it, you remember, about 3 or 4 weeks ago, Mr. Hurst, and that Levi, instead of obtaining a blessing, came under a curse. And no doubt would set forth in a measure the history of the first man, that if in Reuben there was corruption, in Simeon and Levi there were violence, the two things you remember at the outset of Genesis that were the result of sin. But there came a moment, you remember, when Israel was in practical apostasy, and the sons of Levi joined themselves unto the Lord, and it was from that moment, as Moses said, the Lord would bestow a blessing upon them. And I think we can be sure that because of that, this was the blessing that was then promised to them, that they should have this particular service in working in relation to the tabernacle.
Do you think that the particular call to which this tribe responded at that time, and you're talking about who was on the Lord's side? Remember when Moses gave the call, the tribe of Levi responded to it. They responded as on the Lord's side. Has that got some reference, you think, to workers, the Lord's side? Do we come with the Lordship of Christ in the work that we do in connection with the tabernacle and tent of meeting?
Yes, I meant to suggest about that, though we don't want to say too much in one breath, you know. But I meant to suggest about that there's a little picture probably of the gospel having reached us. When we do stand out, confess Christ as Lord, it is this that has brought us into the circle of divine grace and made us available for the service of God.
What I had in mind was that in the chapter in Genesis that you referred to, one of the marks of Levi along with Simeon was self-will.
Oh, yes.
Self-will. Well, there came a point when they responded to the call of the Lordship of Christ, didn't they? Who was on the Lord's side.
Yes.
Directly opposite, isn't it?
Quite. The word there, of course, would be Jehovah. Yes. But it has come out, as we say today, on the line of Romans 10, that we confess Christ as Lord.
Levites are a representative tribe in Israel. Didn't God take them in the place of the firstborn, which he claimed?
Yes.
What bearing has that, do you think, on their call as workers?
Well, some weeks ago, again, you remember, over in Gateshead, we touched on that matter a little in the 13th chapter of Exodus, when God, on the ground of redemption, spared the firstborn of Israel, he said, "Sanctify unto me the firstborn, whether of man or of beast." And I think, Mr. Davison, it represents the claims of God in redemption. And why he takes up this tribe, as we might say, in place of the firstborn to take it up, I think it's the rights of God in redemption. And if we can apply it to ourselves, he's right that we should serve him in this world, having redeemed us.
That would answer, wouldn't it, to the first verse of the 12th of Romans, presenting one's body a living sacrifice.
Yes, very much.
God, which is your reasonable or intelligent service.
Good.
Of course, it certainly does speak of the sovereign grace of God, doesn't it, in taking them up.
Oh, yes.
Genesis 49 that you mentioned, they're linked on there with Simeon as instruments of cruelty.
Right. Yes. Even at the end, you remember, Mr. Duncan, it means joined. Joined. Matter of fact, it's rather interesting that wherever you find Levi in Scripture, he's joined. Joined to Simeon there. He's joined to Aaron, as we see, under these holy things in the tabernacle. You remember the Levi of Luke 5? He joined unto his comrades, follow me. Always united with something. But it's a grand thing that our link with the world that we were joined with has been broken. And God has joined us, as it were, to these divine things, and we have the liberty of serving him in them.
But do you think the Lord is looking for Levites today, Mr. Davison?
Well, I think, taking up the type, that's what we want to get at a little in these readings, that there was a service carried on in relation to the tabernacle system where God dwelt. And I do not doubt a picture of the service that we can render today for his glory.
Would there be any qualifications for them?
Well, we'll come on to those, I think, as we go on. We wonder tonight if we could just take up, first of all, the call here, and then, though we missed the verses out, to refer to the ages that are said about them: a month, 25 years, 30 years, 50 years, are all mentioned in relation to them. The qualification, I think, will fill us out tomorrow night.
And what is their setting in regard to Israel as a whole? Because there are 12 tribes of Israel, and Levi was one of the sons of Israel. But we do find that in Joseph we have Ephraim and Manasseh come in as two of the tribes, and Levi drops out.
Yes. That's because they were not numbered here, you see. They take a distinctive place. And God said about the Levites, "They shall be mine." Their place stood more directly in relation to Jehovah than as a tribe in relation to the 12 tribes. And hence, I think, we see the separateness of, we can almost say, separateness of spirit with us in taking up this divine service, part of the company, and yet distinct from it so far as that service itself is concerned. I think they come in as a link between Aaron and his sons, who were separated altogether to the holy place and the most holy place once a year in the service, and the people in the camp, and they formed a bridge between the priesthood and between the people. And I'm perfectly sure that the real filling out of true Levitical service is the promotion of priestly conditions amongst the saints of God.
Yes, only it's noticeable that there were 12 times as many warriors as there were Levites.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And there was more firstborns that Mr. Davison called attention to. There was more firstborns than Levites could take the place. And there's at least one simple suggestion we can make concerning that. And that is that every saint of God doesn't rise to the privilege. But it's there for them.
You don't think, then, do you, that there's any answer in evangelical work to Levitical service?
I think there is. I think it's all that's connected. We have it here, and we were going to call attention to that in verse 50. "But thou shalt appoint the Levites over the tabernacle of testimony." Now, it doesn't say the tabernacle of the covenant, as it could have done, but the tabernacle of the testimony, and I think it does view us as representative for what is the square of God, whether inside amongst the saints or outside of the world. I certainly think evangelical. launch the saints of God, as well as the defense, we might say, of the gospel, in the midst of hostile rule.
The phrase, the priests and the Levites, occurs several times in the Pentateuch, whereas the priests were essentially Levites themselves. Can you give us a word on the distinction?
Well, it is. They were of the tribe of Levi, you remember. We've often pointed out, Mr. Guns, that Moses and Aaron were both of them pure Kohathites and Levites. As a matter of fact, Moses' father married his aunt. They were of the same tribe, married his father's sister. The result is that Moses and Aaron come of pure Kohathite stock. And it seems right from the outset this was the nation mapped out for this service. Were the priests or Levites, the one being more drawing near to God, the Levite more the handling of the holy vessels, I suppose to support the priesthood on the one hand, and I think we shall find to teach Israel God's statutes and judgments on the other, to form the bridge between the two.
Why did you omit ringing the call at a month old?
Well, it was just a simple little time, that's all, Mr.
Well, I wonder, perhaps you could tell us what the significance of a call at a month was.
Well, they were not called at a month, but to tell the chapter 3 where it is, you're probably looking at it, Mr. Chapter 3, verse 15, isn't it? It says, number the children of Levi, after the house of their fathers, by their families, every male from a month old and upward shall tell number them. Now, I rather take that to be right from the outset of our spiritual history, we were marked down for service in the estimation of God.
And you said there was a greater number then than you number when you choose them for service at 25.
That's right, it is, yes. But there was, we said that it was the firstborns, 273, was it, for whom a Levite could not be found, hence they paid the ransom money. But I'd rather regarded the month old that from the very outset of our spiritual history in relation to God, it was in view that we should serve Him in this world. They numbered there from a month old and upward.
You reckon that from our conversion?
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm trying to suggest. Yes, right. We get, as we said, we just wanted a general introduction tonight about the subject. We read, as you read to us, that at 25 years old they were taken into the number. But it wasn't, it seems, till 30 years old that they actually began to take up their service. There seemed to have been the one tribe who waited about 5 years on their service. That word is used, though not correct, but that was the thought in it. That for 5 years, as it were, they waited upon their service before actually functioning in it. Now, I've been interested in, there's many places where we might look at these things, but one particularly is outstanding, I think, in the first chapter of Galatians, if you call attention to it. You remember the words of the Apostle Paul, when it pleased God, who separated me from my mother's womb, right back to his birth, you see, and called me by his grace, I would suggest that was 25, that I might preach him among the heathen, I suggest was 30. We have him born under the eye of God. We find him brought out by God, called in grace, and then entering actively into his service when he preached Christ as glad tidings among the heathen. As one place I think would answer to them.
You'd have a difficulty in ending with the 50, though, wouldn't you?
That's the thing that we just have some difficulty about, Mr. Doyle. I'm not saying, of course, that these were Paul's ages. I think he was much younger than 30 before he set out. Mark, you the Lord wasn't. You know, in the third chapter of Luke, it says about the Lord being about 30 years old, he told the Levitical service, and he set out. But then he ended at 33, didn't he? So far as this world was concerned. I think there is just a moral thought about it in connection with it. I hope some of our young brothers here tonight, for instance, are not waiting till they're 30 before they step out. What was physical with them, I'm sure, has a moral teaching for us today.
Yes, it is moral, isn't it? Because if you take Moses, the ages are altogether out of it.
That's right.
And yet he had to wait not 5 years, but 40
years. Yes. Yes. Yes, you Jesus may be seen there in the 340s with Moses, you know.
Hmm. So the 5 years apprenticeship would be equivalent to Paul saying not a novice.
It would be, I think so. And you remember how he says himself, looking back to that epistle again in Galatians, that he was 3 years in the deserts of Arabia. He was immediately going to an active service. He was being formed for that ministry. Somebody referred to Romans 12 a little earlier. I rather thought that on that line, perhaps the first 8 chapters of Romans would be forming us. Then we get the call in chapter 12. Ye are your bodies. And then a few verses further down in that same chapter, we are told of the various equipment, spiritual equipment, in taking up active service in the Christian company.
I was just wondering about the question that George raised in connection with the evangelical side.
Yes.
With regard to Israel themselves, any of the tribes at all, there was no desire upon their part for evangelical work. When God wanted them to go, they seemed to refuse it, didn't they?
Yes. That's the nation. We're just trying to take the extensive view of those who have the privilege of handling these holy things in service for God. And I don't think I'd like to exclude evangelicalism, particularly with you sitting here.
Might I ask you then, when we come to the point in Paul's history where the Spirit says, separate me, Barnabas and Saul, for the work, is that 30, and was that evangelical work?
I think so. It was indeed very good, Mr. Quite.
The sphere of the evangelist, the proper sphere of the evangelist, is the world at large, isn't it, Mr. Garrison?
Aye, but as attached to the assembly, isn't it, to bring in the material?
Yes.
Quite.
Because I was thinking of the parallel between the Levites and the evangelists. The Levites' service was purely connected with the tabernacle, wasn't it?
Yes. Yes, quite.
Tabernacle only. But as you pointed out, although the sphere of the evangelist is the whole world, yet it's not separated from the assembly.
Oh, that's. I got it. That's what Mr. W. had in mind, you see. What a little bit I do in the gospel, I always keep in mind it's assembly material that we're after, and I'm sure Mr. Doherty does.
That's it. Better seen in the quarry, but would it not be in Solomon's temple? That's what would it not?
Well, it's a matter, as we've said, about service, and it does come in amongst the gifts, you remember, in the fourth of Ephesians. And I'm sure that, indeed, we only got to look at Paul's activities, our brother said, about going round with the gospel. He says in the, I think it's the 15th of Romans, carrying on as a sacrificial service the gospel. There it is, priestly work in the gospel. There's not only the side, as already we've indicated, we'll see it this week, of handling the things of God, it's not the priesthood, drawing the ear of God in worship, you see. It's in their charge, the handling of the whole tabernacle system. All that God has been pleased to reveal concerning himself, formed in the house of God, the carrying and moving and care of that was in their hands.
It seems to me that they dealt with what was there.
Oh yes, oh yes.
They dealt with what was there.
Oh yes, quite.
The tabernacle had been raised, so on the knees.
We see that, I hope, yes.
If the Levites had to wait till they were 25 before they could wait on service, how is it that the warriors could go fall to war when they were 20?
Well, does that not suggest that greater maturity is needed in the handling of these divine things in relation to God? And as I said, you see the link also with the priesthood in approach to God. I think from the moment we confess Christ as Lord, we were capable of defending the testimony.
Germanic John 9.
Yes, yes. We're quite in a good case, Mr. Whale. Yes.
What does the man in John 9 do?
He says it's a strange thing. He hadn't grown very far then, but he defended the person that had met his need.
And so we read about them. Thou shalt appoint the Levites over the tabernacle of testimony, and over all the vessels. I suppose that's the furniture in the holy vessels, and over all things that belong to it. They shall bear the tabernacle and all the vessels thereof,
would it be true to suggest that service is within a defined limit, within a given sphere? They weren't allowed to go into the most holy place, were they?
Oh, yes, quite. That's, I see what you mean. That's why we're just guarding it a little on both sides, that the Levites, they didn't enter into the holy place, but they ministered unto Aaron and his sons, as I hope we shall see this week. But moreover, they were also to teach Israel the statutes and ways of God. You remember, for instance, in the book of Ezra, when they stood on that pulpit and read the word of God from morning to night, that was Levitical service, teaching them the things of God.
To give the sense of
God. That's very good. Yeah. That's Nehemiah, is it? Nehemiah 8 and 8.
Yeah.
Am I right on that?
Yes, I'm not sure.
Is that right? Aye. As a matter of fact, Mr. Davis, if you look that up, I'd like to commend that to every brother that speaks in our meetings. I think it's Nehemiah 8 and 8.
Read this distinctly.
Go on, have you heard that?
Gave the sense and caused them to understand the reading.
Aye. Read distinctly, gave the sense, and caused them to understand the reading. Some brothers get up in our meetings, the lighters will never have opened their mouths. Sometimes you can't hear them, and after they've spoken, you don't know what they're talking about. I think we need just to think about these things, you know.
You mean we should be intelligible as well as intelligent?
Yes, quite. It's easy enough to speak out that people can hear, and in terms that people can understand. Like a brother who gave an elaborate outline of the mystery, a sister at the door says, well, it's as big a mystery you've made to me as ever. Well, it may have been, yes, yes. But it is well to remember that if we're in the meetings and if we have something worth saying, say it in terms and in a way that people can understand. That's true of Levitical service.
Is there any reference here to the royal priesthood and the holy priesthood?
Yes, I think that's another New Testament answer to it, as we've often pointed out, that with the Levites, they take more the character of the royal than the holy priesthood. Aaron and his sons probably take that up. But it's striking, as you know, that in Peter's epistle, he speaks of the priesthood of the saints in a twofold way. Never refers to the priesthood of Christ. Whereas in Hebrews, it always refers to the priesthood of Christ, and never directly to the priesthood of believers. But I think all the same as you say, that the royal and holy priesthood seem to answer to the Levites and to Aaron.
Seeing that we should be both priests and Levites, could you help us with a word as to the very definite instruction that they were not to look upon the ark, that to be covered before they saw it?
Yes, well, we've said again about these things, Mr. Wheel, that why that happened with them, because of being a distinctive tribe, they were not fully sanctified nor anointed with that holy oil as Aaron was, to look upon it. But I'm persuaded the thing is true for us today.
But that's the bit I wanted you to explain.
Right, yes. It's true for us.
How does it stand with us?
Well, then we are priests as well as Levites.
But where is the line of demarcation? I must not look as a Levite. I must not look on the ark till the priest is covered in. What does that mean?
Well, I can only suggest that must be in the spirit of your own soul as to how you regard these things and their holy connection with God. It's one thing to carry a vessel. It's another thing to know what you're carrying. Aaron, of course, knew what was there. The Levites never saw it. They carried it without seeing it. But the difficulty, as we've said about that today, is we ought to see it. And we ought to carry it.
So that David was a Levite from the moment he said in the fields, we saw it at Ephrata.
You couldn't have had a better. There's the royal and holy priesthood. He wore his enemy for, you remember, dance before the Lord.
So it's nice to see that we are both, aren't we?
Yes, quite.
Take account of ourselves as priests as well as Levites.
Mm-hmm.
So that we have liberty of both services, haven't we?
I think so.
So in that sense, we can look upon the ark.
The point is, I think, that in Levitical service and carrying these things, it's more the ministry of them in the circle to which we belong. Whereas in the priesthood and their side of it, it's more speaking to God about them. If there's any line of demarcation, I should suggest there it is. That on the one hand, it's as we speak together about them, but in touch across the air. But we said a little earlier, remember, that I'm sure that true Levitical service is bound to promote priestly conditions. And what I meant was that if these things are carried on rightly in ministry one with another, as in these meetings we're trying to help one another, the result should be to give us a more intelligent grasp of these things, that when we do turn to God, we can more intelligently worship Him, and having a little more light concerning them.
We often hear, Mr. Davison, that priestly service promotes Levitical service. That is, our service in the inside place makes us capable of going to the outside. But how do we reconcile that with what we're reading?
Well, as a matter of fact, both of them are true. But I think you must start on the Levitical side, because how would you know anything about these things if they were not ministered? Has it not come about, now I'm glad you've raised that, and our own history in the meetings, that when we first came along, we had little conception about what the brethren were talking about. But as these things were ministered to us and they grew in our souls, the moment came when we had confidence to turn to God and speak about them.
Yes, but it's one thing to be intelligent in them.
Oh, yes.
It's another thing to be in the spirit of
them. Oh, yes, I quite see. Now, I was going to say, working out from that, now as we've got on a little bit and know what it is to go to God, if we are not taking part in this way, God, within what we do know, I don't think we're going to have much capability now in carrying them ourselves. I think it's a thing we arrive at Levitical service from a month, 25 and 30. It's in the growth, you see.
Isn't there a balance in divine things, Mr. Davison? If we're lacking in either of these sides that you're speaking of, the side of priestly service or the side of Levitical service, well, we're lopsided, aren't we?
Well, yes, yes. We are bound to go beyond these types today, you see, while trying to get just a little gain on one side of them. There's such a fullness in what God has called us into today. We are right beyond this typical system.
The main service seems to be dismounting, carrying, and rearing again. Is that the main service for the Levites?
Well, now, there again, we might say tonight, so far as we are concerned locally, the tabernacle's pitched. We're just sitting together trying to help one another. But then in the tabernacle in movement, it's when testimony is being born to these things. And the work is going on. There is time, indeed, I'm persuaded that in the pitching of the tabernacle, the Levites rested. We transfer now from Levitical service to priestly service in turning Godward.
Good to see that. Were not families within the family of Levi that had to do certain things?
Well, we're hoping to see that as we get on, in the appointment of their service.
Didn't he answer Stephen's request?
Oh, yeah, now he's forgotten Nehemiah 8 and 8, you see. Say it again.
I said, was there not families within the family of Levi that had special jobs to do in connection with the movement of the tabernacle?
Yes. We find them, as a matter of fact, a little bit later, I think in verse chapter 2, is it? Yes, in verse chapter 3, in verse 17, you're referring to Gershom, Kohath, and Merari. The three separate families, of course, right, of the Levites. We've already pointed out that Moses and Aaron were of the Kohathite line. And no doubt they came more prominently, as I hope we shall see in chapter 4. And there again is an interesting matter, that in the line of birth we find it was Gershom, Kohath, and Merari. But when it came to the appointment of their service, it was Kohath, Gershom, and Merari. And the simple suggestion we always make about that is that God is sovereign in the selection of his servants. It's not a question of what I may think I ought to be doing. The question is, what has God called me to do? He puts Levi before Gershom and Merari in the sovereignty of divine selection.
Yes, that is true today, isn't it, when it comes to Ephesians, and he gave some apostles, and some prophets, and some evangelists, and some pastors and teachers for the perfecting of the saints.
I'm glad you read that second one, for the perfecting of the saints. There it is, you see, in his ministry.
You wouldn't set one of these against the other, would you?
Couldn't do without any one of them, Mr. W. prophets, and the older I get, the more I appreciate that. I hope there's no saint of God thinks the meeting gets on better without them. It isn't true. Say, well, I never say anything, never do anything. Oh, but you're there, there's something there. God has put it there. And if there's exercise of heart, it's going to be a help in that company.
In that third group, Mr. Davison, they were allowed to use wagons for carrying considerable weights. Have you ever thought of that, what that would represent today?
Well, there are certain adjuncts that we sometimes say in connection with the testimony, they have the heaviest burdens to bear. It was only, as far as I can see, the holy vessels that were put upon the shoulders of Kohath, the things that particularly speak of Christ. That's what's borne on the shoulders.
There'll be a tremendous vehicle needed for Paul. The care of all the churches.
Aye. That's fine.
Have you any thought, Mr. Davison, as to the significance of them encamping around the tabernacle?
I know that's one of the points we wanted to touch, Mr. Davison. I'm glad you brought us back to it. Well, does that not suggest, if we speak a little personally, that if you're going to carry on your service rightly, Mr. Davison, you'll need to dwell very close to these divine things all the time. Is that right?
Yes.
For instance, if you spent the whole of the week in the wilderness and attached yourself to the tabernacle on the Lord's Day, you wouldn't expect to get very far, would you? Oh yes, I think that's of the greatest importance to keep constantly in touch every day, whatever the circumstances may be, to remember that we've been charged with the interests of Christ in this world and set to maintain them at all points.
Paul said to Timothy, meditate on these things, give thyself wholly to them.
Very good.
Is that your thought?
I'm sure he was running very near the tent of meeting with them.
Well, it does say that there'd be no wrath on the congregation of Israel they were there. Is it not, Mr. Nelson?
Well, they were not sanctified to draw near, you see. Each must keep their particular part. It would have meant that an unsanctified hand that touched the tabernacle.
Yes.
You may say, but then we are sanctified. We are, but let us see that when we do seek to touch these divine things, we do so in sanctified conditions. Our wrath is bound to come in the governmental dealings of God.
Do you think that Paul and Timothy sanctified and meet for the master's?
Well, that, yes, that's one on his side. Indeed, it was the cleansing of a Levite, that. Now, we meant just to point out a verse, as a matter of fact, I only noted it today in looking it up. In verse 49 of chapter 1, I discovered that this word for number is not the same all the time. Verse 49 should read, only thou shalt not muster the tribe of Levi, neither take the sum, the number of them. There's a mustering as well as a numbering. If anybody's interested, you'll find a concordance. We'll check them out. Mustering and numbering. So that it isn't only a matter of what is numerical. It's a question of the assembly being mustered and assembled and united there, ready to carry on with the work.
Will that set forth fellowship?
Well, I think this is a mustering of Levites tonight.
Would you suggest you can't serve individualism?
You can't. That's what I have in mind in the mustering. And that's what I think Mr. Doherty had in mind a little earlier. I think the more we realize our interdependence one upon another and the unity of the service, the more useful we're going to be in it. Sure of that.
The Levitical service is subordinate to the Aaronic priesthood, isn't it?
Yes, quite. That is the top stone, you see. The privilege of drawing near to God.
There is a tendency on the part of some to put service predominantly. The Lord said, Mary hath chosen the better part.
That good part which shall not be taken from her. Mm.
The scripture says, thou shalt not muster.
Yes?
Where are we reading?
Verse 49, verse.
Oh, that's right, I'm sorry, yes. Not muster them. That is, among the children of Israel. Thanks for that correction. You'll find in this chapter it's Moser as well as Number.
Not mustering among the children of Israel, but to infer that there is no other work or duty to be done apart from that which they had in view, the natural tabernacle.
Well, the distinction again between the two, I think, would be that I have to regard myself not only as belonging to the Christian company, but as having some distinctive service in relation to that company. I mean, there is one way, of course, when we stand all on one common footing. Indeed, Peter, you know, speaks of that. He speaks of the people that have obtained life, precious faith, with us. We sometimes told people when they talk about the Apostle Peter, well, we've got the same faith as Peter, you know. We've got the same forgiveness. We've got the same Spirit of God that Peter had. He had apostolicity that we haven't got, but we've got all the rest. You see, there's something distinctive in Levitical service, while in one way, the camp, you see, we're all together. And I think that idea that's been said that they were not to be mustered with the rest was to bring them out in their distinctive service for the Lord.
But there is no individual calling to a service. They are appointed to different services,
yes,
but only as called. That is, I suppose the time of waiting is waiting till one is called. And if you are in the service that you are called to, you are not overlapping anyone else.
Right.
And the whole company are coordinated in regard to the one thing, the tabernacle in the center.
That's right. I think so.
That excludes any freelance effort on my part, doesn't it?
It does, yes, indeed. What would be the good of having Bible readings like this if somebody didn't come along to give a bit of help? We can't do without each other.
We certainly get more help collectively, according to the New Testament, than we do by individual reading at home, don't we?
Yes, sure. Though we need it, of course, for our individual study, but ever keeping in mind the coordination of this divine service.
And now I understand the warriors were on the outside.
Yes, yes.
Would there be an order in that, then?
Well, of course, they were all ordered under their own standards, etc. As far as that was concerned, the Levites were on the inside, camped on three sides of the tabernacle, north, south, and west, was their place from the tabernacle. Of Aaron and his sons were east of the tabernacle at the door.
In relation to that, Mr. Davidson, could you help me in regard to a point that's been a puzzle to me? They're commanded here to encamp around the tabernacle.
Yes.
Well, when they get into the land, and the tabernacle was set up at all, then they were given 48 cities, situated all over the land to dwell in.
Yes.
What do they understand by that then? They weren't encamping around the tabernacle then, were they?
No. When you're under wilderness conditions then, I think that's the point, and in the divine inheritance. It's in wilderness conditions where things needed defending, and of course they needed carrying. There was movement here, but by the time they arrived at Shiloh, it was established.
Isn't that a wonderful thing said about the Levites then? There was, when the land was shared out, there was no portion given to the Levites. The Lord was their portion.
Right. Quite remarkable that. Mm. It was out of their cities, you remember, the cities of refuge were appointed.
Would that be the result of what we have in verse 50? And they shall minister unto it.
Unto it? Oh yes, I think that's the point. Mm.
They minister to the tabernacle. Who do we serve today? Or what do we serve?
Well, it's the service of God that we take up. Bearing testimony to Christ and all that he has done. I mean, when you think of the multiplicity of things today, the answer to the Ark of the Covenant, the mediatorial position of Christ in the divine circle, the throne of God, perhaps Romans 3, the mercy seat, God's place and the rights of God maintained in the Christian company. So far as I can see it, in the golden lampstand of 1 talent weight, the presence of the Spirit in the divine company to give light and guidance to the saints of God. You have the golden altar that speaks of the priesthood of Christ. So we might go on with the whole tabernacle system. This is what they bore and this is what they carry.
It's the service. I'm just going to say, it's the service in its completeness in the divine system in detail.
And the answer to carrying these things is a ministry of them, is it today?
I think it is. But you must hold them in your affections. I think it's as you hold them in your affections that you carry them today.
In Isaiah, we read, "Be ye holy, that ye are the vessels of the Lord."
That's
is that your political service?
I think it is indeed.
The minister to it would it not be in relation to the 12th of Romans that you've quoted already, the thought of the body coming in, where we all move in harmony for the edification and the good of the body, the whole.
Well, we said that, you remember, that after the first two verses of Romans 12, where a movement is on our side. And that's one of the points I'm hoping we'll get on to before the week is out, to show how very much dependent on movement from the side of the Levites for this service, that it might stir us up an exercise of our faith. But after the first two verses of the 12th of Romans, then we are told what God has given, as it were, in consecration. It begins with dedication, the first two verses, but the next two are consecration, filling the hand. That is, God gives us now what we need to carry on that service.
The equipment that we have today is the Ephesians 4 aspect of this, to the perfecting of the saints.
Yes, I think that's the whole point, but is in it. Help us, we may say, one of another. I'm back to Romans 12 now, where it's been said about this collective side, I think it's four times in Romans 12, one of another. And what I like about Romans 12, as we've been seeking to establish of late, that the aspect of the body in Romans 12 is the whole Christian company everywhere, every saint of God. As a true Levite, I ought to serve them as much as ever I can.
If the service being independent, independence you would be promoted. That was the case, wasn't
that's
it?
Right.
Yes.
Now, if we can turn over to chapter 8 towards the end. We said we just expected a diversified word from tonight. We read in verse 24 that this is that that belongeth unto the Levites. This is their service. From 25 years old and upward, they shall go in to wait. A word you may find in the margin of war, the warfare. Striking how these words are connected with conflict. War of the warfare of the service of the tabernacle of the congregation, the tent of meeting. Now, there's no one can go on with divine things, whether, as has been said in testimony to the world in the gospel, for I'm persuaded in the seeking to grasp and hold and minister divine truth without conflict. It's a conflict with the Levites as well as with the warriors who were to take possession of the land. We've only to look a little into the history of the Apostle Paul, more outstandingly, to have some idea of the conflict he went through in his Levitical service for God. A word, you're sorry, Mr. Duffy, go on. What are you going to speak?
I was just
going to
say that.
And certain names occur to us of brethren, much used of God.
that in the latter end of their life began to say things and did things that brought discredit on them and their testimony. And one just wonders if they'd taken more regard to this, if these things wouldn't have happened. I'm not prepared to press it, but it's been a great exercise to me. Brethren, that we have met ourselves and enjoyed their ministry, we've noted as they've got toward the end of the pathway, they've brought discredit upon themselves and things they've said. And one wonders if they had not, should not have ceased from active service and joined in just the general fellowship together of the saints of God suggested in this passage.
Not exactly at the age of 50, of course.
No, not. But when
I
they
felt that there was a spiritual decline.
I think so, yes.
These men were well pensioned, evidently, to be able to live up to 50, Mr. Hearside. Doesn't that prove the high quality of their service and the way they ought to have been esteemed in the eyes of all Israel?
Well, that is there. And along with that, from 30 to 50 would be what we call the best years of the life.
Yes.
I think another thing we need to regard, you know, we've run across a lot of people who give the best years of their life to getting on in the world and wanted to give a few of their declining years to the service of the Lord. It's absolutely hopeless. Collapses at the end is bound to do. Why should I give the Lord the last one? I'll serve the Lord when I've nothing else to do, eh? No, that won't do for God. He wants the best of our life. Maybe a moral side of it, but it's there.
Such an one as Paul aged, but we find the Lord put him in a place where he wrote to the saints.
Yes, that is very good. Very good. I remember some years ago a brother who, like that, had been very active in service and was laid aside. And he wrote to some brethren that he said, no, he says, I've been promoted. He says that my active service is over. I think J.B.S. said that long before he died. He said, I've reached the solemn point when my active service is done. But this brother said, I've been promoted. That while I can no longer move about an active service, I'm taking up the service of prayer.
I notice Mr. Darby uses retire from the labour of the service.
Yes, that's right. Very good, I've noticed that. Retire from the labour, but not from the service. That's right. Now, that's what Mr. Davison is guarding against, that we're never going to give it up altogether. But the more active labouring of it, there comes a time when it may be sad to some brethren getting old. We may all face it one of these days if the Lord doesn't come to realise, well, I can't do what I used to do. I'd better leave it to the more active young men that are more able to do it.
Could you manage to something else, too?
Go on, I'll be good.
Isn't it sure the graciousness and the kindness of the Lord in earth our frail?
Yes.
Yes, it would also show that the grace of the brethren would have to come out to support such a one as the other, I think, as well. I think it's intensely practical there with the grace of these Levites, finishing at 50. I've heard the servants of the Lord die nearly starving in the houses, which really is their discredit to the saints, isn't it?
Aye, well, it could be,
yes. Yes, it is. I'm sure of that.
Would this not be due to the physical strain that they ceased at 50?
Of course it was. That's why we're saying that it was the best years of their lives that were given to that service, and not when they were hardly capable of rendering it. I couldn't think that the Lord would call me to some service that I wasn't, well, not physically today, we have to be careful, but that I wasn't able to perform. It was physical, of course, for them.
There were 22,000 of these Levites.
Yes.
And it was a small tent with a court around about.
Right.
The jobs must be a very small one.
Well, however small it was, the instructions are here. 30 years to 50.
We're talking about strenuous.
Oh, strenuous work, eh? Well.
I was going to say, could you help a little perhaps with the last clause? But he shall minister with his brethren in the tent of meeting. Tell us what that means.
Well, I think that's as we've said, that we're not altogether withdrawn from the service of the saints of God, but we are maybe not as active as we used to be. I mean, I've known brethren, I can look back to a day when a brother was asked to preach. No, he said, my preaching days are over. Just get someone for a day. I'll be very glad to come along and listen to them. He didn't suffer long.
I was very struck with your remarks about a brother in his declining years, failing in service. If we go back over Brethren's history, it's true.
true, isn't it?
Well, I must say that one has for some years been thinking of that, Mr. Wheel.
I'm afraid that's the real truth of the matter.
We shall be bringing forth fruit in old age.
Oh, yes, indeed. Quite sure of that. But there is such a thing as being as we think. Well, it's getting a question in some quarters even today, eh? Well, the certain brothers aren't just able to do what they're attempting to do. It's getting a question. Only we can't sit and throw stones at folks. I'm quite frank about it. No, we'll not say any more. But we do say that, we say that sort of thing about today. And I... Go on, Mr.
I was going to say, perhaps the field is not enough young men coming on.
Well, that's true.
But I think it's certainly what you said tonight should give the young men courage.
Oh, no.
25 years on to get busy. Otherwise, the time of the service may pass.
That's
right. And in thinking over what you said, it does seem that the most active years of the life of some of the servants of God that one can think of were 30 to 50 when they did the most valuable work amongst the saints.
Yes. It was young men, apparently, the Lord called. We've just dropped a little note off to a magazine about that, you know, when he called the four of the disciples, you remember. Two of them were casting a net. They went a little bit further and found other two mending a net. He wasn't looking for men that had nothing to do. They were all busy. The Lord said, follow me.
Some of the service of the Levites seem to be judicial in its character. Can you say something about the strangers who had come nigh after being put to death?
Well, we were only remarking about that, about the unsanctified hand that would attempt to handle these holy things, you see. They would have been cut off in the judgment of God.
Yes, but is this not a stranger from Israel altogether?
Oh yes, quite an unsanctified hand. I mean, how many of them have we today that attend Levitical service that have never been sanctified by the blood of Christ, much less by the Spirit? Oh yes, strangers indeed.
You mean that attempt to touch these things by the mind and brains of men?
Quite, I do, yes.
Unconverted men, as you refer to.
We know that most of the troubles in Christendom have come from that. Unconverted men in these places of authority are not even converted to God.
Talking back to you, what we were speaking of before, the Lord himself chose young men. He chose the sons of Zebedee, he didn't choose Zebedee.
Yes, very good.
What is the force of the expression? To keep the charge, we shall do no service. To keep the charge.
Yes. I took the trouble some years ago, Gordon, seeing that you raised that up, to look out these charges. I forget, I couldn't tell you now how many I found, but I've always regarded a charge as a sense of responsibility on one's soul. That the Lord has put something into your charge, and you're responsible to look after it. I mean, we feel about our meetings and things like that, coming to the Bible, readings in the opening up of the truth. And those of us whom perhaps have got on a little bit and have been held by others, here we are now left ourselves, as it were, in charge. I mean, the meeting doesn't belong to us, it belongs to the Lord. And as this service is going on to carry this responsibility in one's soul, the Lord has put me there in a responsible position, and I'm answerable to the Lord about it. Keep the charge.
So although those who retire from service actively,
that's right,
do no actual service, they are there possibly as fathers.
Oh, that's right. Oh yes, they keep the charge. I might have said connected with that, I wondered if that was in Paul's mind. When you remember, right into Timothy, he says, I charge thee, second epistle, you remember, before God and Jesus Christ. How does that run now? Preach the word, anyhow. Preach the word, yes. He puts it upon him as a responsibility. I nearly mixed up two before Pontius Pilate witnessed a good confession, but that's not the one I was quoting. Who will judge both the quick and the dead at his appearing in kingdom? That's it. Preach the word. Now, why keep that in mind, the solemnity on the one hand, of dealing with these holy things? You'll not find me speaking lightly or working lightly in regard to these divine things.
Evidently,
you
had a kind of oversight.
Well, it is, they were in their charge. And if anything had gone wrong, they were responsible for it going wrong. And no doubt, perhaps, in the addresses to the seven assemblies,
It's the angels, you remember, who were mainly responsible and held responsible for the things going wrong in the assembly.
Will Paul speak of being stewards of the mystery?
He does. Stewards of the mysteries of God. 4 Corinthians.
Is that the same thing?
I'm sure it is. The responsibility that having had these things committed to them, to see that they use them rightly for the glory of the Lord. I'm very glad you've raised that. It would be just a check for any one of us, lest we dealt with any of these divine matters too lightly. I mean, we've heard things said about, well, a Sunday school class. Oh, well, that's easy, as anybody can speak to children. Well, if I go to a Sunday school like that, I even wonder if I don't get any blessing, you know, of the children.
It's a rather interesting thought in John's epistle to the young men. In John's epistle, he says, I write unto you, young men, because you have overcome the wicked one. I write unto you, young men, because ye are strong, and the word of God abideth in you, and ye have overcome the wicked one. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. And so on. It's a question of giving yourself to these things and going on with them.
I think so. We're back now to dwelling near the tabernacle, aren't we?
Yes.
Keeping in touch with them continually.
The connection with the sense of responsibility that's being stressed and taking charge, those who were suitable, or when they reached 25, were they told that they were 25, or did they know themselves?
I suppose they did. Unless, I suppose they'd have to prove that before they could enter into this service. What made you say that?
Well,
you mean you don't wait till somebody else tells you that, are you?
Well, I was wondering if there's any parallel.
I see what you're getting at.
I was raised the point that about young men being chosen.
I see your point, yes. Yes, right. No, I think we should come to that and exercise in our own souls. Coming back to Romans 12, we have that there, you know. That every man should think soberly, according as God has given to everyone a measure of grace, is it? Measure of grace. Aye. Dealt to every man a measure of faith. That's it. Think soberly. I think that's arriving at the 25, you know, and seeking now before God to learn just what is my place here in the company.
We'll have to be careful, though, that we don't get these literal figures in our minds, 25 and 30.
Ah, yes, that's right. Oh, yes, thanks, Mr. David. We're trying to guard against that, of course. We've already said about Paul that he probably was just a little over 20 when God called him, so far as we can assess it.
The point was raised recently in the Bible reading regarding the novice. Could you help a little bit on that as to how is to be seen the character, a novice?
Well, I was asked on the other side, what is an elder? It's one that has gained experience of the testimony. And I think, Mr. Gidney, as we go on, we very soon recognize when brethren have sufficient ability and sufficient experience to know how to deal and handle with things rightly. And I think we can be very, very thankful in encouraging our young brethren as we do around here. As far as I know, they know their place and we know it too, and we're glad to see them growing on to maturity. That's what's in your mind.
Yeah.
Yes, right. I mean, we were young brethren in the meeting at one time, you know.
Imagine how more skilled we are in material things. If we sent for somebody to do a job in the house, we would know very well whether he was a novice at his job or whether he was a master craftsman.
That's right.
And I think that we should, shouldn't we, with a measure of spirituality, each one of us, not speaking about those who get upon the box and speak, but every one of us, surely, with a measure of spirituality, we should be able to judge whether a man's a novice.
Oh, yes. I think we do.
A craftsman.
Quite.
Certainly, if a brother gets up before a meeting, the meeting will soon tell him up whether he's a novice or not, whether he knows it in fact.